It is November 8th, 2016. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 623 of the Will Leach Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. I thank you for spending part of your day with me. This is my first public comment on this podcast since the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, potentially sending Earth careening off its axis and crashing into the sun. So far, so good. But it's election day, so we'll see. But I'm very glad today to move on from such upset, sad things from the past to discuss. Oh man, my guest is a Cubs fan. Great. I'm here for my annual pre-college basketball podcast with the great, the one, the only Matt Norlander from CBS Sports. Mr. Norlander, first off, before we get into any college basketball stuff, which starts Friday, congratulations to your Cubs.
Hey, Will, great to be back. Amazing to be on the podcast in the wake of such an incredible, intense, and amazing World Series championship. I do want to say real quick to any Cubs fans listening, it feels very, very real. So the one thing I was wondering when the Cubs were going through this, one, I was content only with making the World Series this year. That might sound weird, but I can't explain why just even getting to the World Series felt like it was good enough for this year. Like I was willing to continue to pay the dues. And if they lost in the World Series, it would have sucked, but I would have been okay with it. As weird as that sounds, it's just how I felt. Now, when they actually won it, and I felt they were going to win it until the Davis homer to tie the game, then I thought they were going to lose it. Because it was, your piece was very good in describing the pace and the feeling of the game. Like it just felt too casual the way that they were just going to get there and win game seven. But after they won it, Will, it felt very real. It felt immediate that they won. It didn't take me 2 days to realize they won the World Series. It's felt like they won the World Series basically the second since it happened. And that's something that maybe I wasn't quite expecting, but I appreciate you opening a college basketball podcast, talking about a little bit of baseball, which obviously is one of your many fortes. And yeah, man, it is a thrill to be on, especially with, you know, such a devoted diehard Cardinals fan like yourself.
Yeah, the biggest mistake you made in that answer was assuming that any Cubs fans listen to this podcast. They have long since unsubscribed. And for that, I suppose it is difficult to blame them. All right, man, it is college basketball season. I'm very excited. I'm even more so excited this year because I really need a sporting distraction immediately from the Cubs World Series. I always joke with you in the past that every year the Cardinals lose in the playoffs or if they don't win the championship, the first thing I say to my father, we have a phone call and he says, all right, time for Illini basketball. It is that transition happens very quickly. It's always very perfect for us. So Friday, November 11th, the annual start of college basketball. You've written before about the idea of should college basketball have like a big blowout opening day thing. I feel like they tried that a little bit with all those games they played on aircraft carriers, but I feel like those days are mostly like they're like, oh right, there's wind and rain and elements that make these games kind of weird. Do you like the first day big blowout where everybody plays?
Sure. And this year we have one of the biggest ever. I mean, ultimately we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but I think some of the criticism of college basketball not having a huge grand opening night, some of it's a little overwrought in my opinion, but it doesn't hurt to try and get a huge opening night. Certainly we will have it on Friday. Man, college basketball season starts Friday. Thank
I know.
God. The two biggies here, Michigan State, Kansas, Indiana, and Arizona are all out in Hawaii. And the one thing College Hoops does really, really well is it aligns itself in a very appropriate way with honoring America's military and fallen veterans. The season usually starts around Veterans Day. This year it starts on Veterans Day, which is Friday. And so we will have a terrific doubleheader with Michigan State, Arizona, and Kansas versus Indiana. Those are four teams all ranked in the preseason. Kansas, you know, number three, essentially. Michigan State and Arizona have some interesting things going on because those are obviously really powerful programs. Both programs right now are kind of just twisting in the wind due to injuries and possible suspensions and all that. Indiana is a top 10 to top 15 team, seen by some to be the Big Ten favorite. Some people think it's Wisconsin. At full strength, it was going to be Michigan State, but they have lost, ideally, at least one of their big men, Ben Carter, for the year, and Gavin Schilling will not be able to play in the game. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there. So that's the doubleheader to really look forward to on Friday. And you usually don't get four you know, two games with four preseason top 25 teams on the opening night of the season. That's a really cool way to start the season.
All right, so I don't really feel like we need to go like by division by conference by conference. I want to ask just like general larger questions about.
You just tell me what you want to talk about, and I'll wax poetic as best I can.
I know that's the best, one of the best things. I always remember David Letterman always talked. They asked him who his favorite guest was. And he said anyone I could ask a question and then they just talk. I feel like that no one is better at that than you, Norlander, because you know this stuff better than anyone. One of the things that has jumped out at me. Obviously, you know, you look at the top 10s, it's everyone you'd expect. You know, Duke is there, Kansas is there, North Carolina's there, Kentucky's there, and obviously the national champion Villanova is there. And one team this year that people seem to be exceptionally excited about, they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I believe Lindy's had them number one going into the season, they're 6 in KenPom, is Oregon. How excited should we be about Oregon?
Yeah, so Oregon, let's talk a little bit about the Ducks here. They were a one seed last year, which I feel some people might be forgetting, but they got romped by Oklahoma and Buddy Hield in the Elite Eight. And so because the win or the loss was so demolishing, maybe people have forgotten that Oregon actually knocked off Grayson Allen and Duke and sent them out of the tournament. Dylan Brooks is my pick for player of the year. Take that with whatever salt you want. I did pick Buddy Hield last year when no one else did in the preseason. I think Brooks is a tremendous wing. He has a mysterious lingering foot issue. That's the only thing. There is an asterisk to that pick. Dana Altman, Oregon's coach, hasn't really given too much information on how serious the foot injury is and if Brooks is going to be limited or outright unavailable at the very start of the season. But overall, this is a team with as long and strong and veteran late in a starting five as college basketball has this season. They should be considered a national title contender. Oregon famously won the very first true NCAA tournament in 1939, has not gotten back. In some ways, I guess Paris and I actually talked about this on the CBS podcast. Maybe they are the Chicago Cubs of college basketball, because the Cubs obviously won in 07 and 08 right at the start of the World Series era. Oregon won the very first one. Hasn't really sniffed it since then. They'll have a really good shot this year. Chris Boucher is a fantastic big man that I think will start to get more national recognition overall. Jordan Bell is just an awesome athlete, an awesome player. I think this will be the best team in the Pac-12. I think it'll get a push from UCLA, who was sub-500 but has such a talented roster. UCLA has to be good this year. If they're not, if UCLA somehow is not a five seed or better, there will be a lot of heat coming on Steve Alford for that, because they're just so loaded. But Oregon should have the best team getting back. You know, they have Dylan Ennis, who once was at Villanova. He applied, like Chris Boucher, for a six-year eligibility. They both get it. Tyler Dorsey, probably a top 7 or 8 sophomore in the country. There's just so much here, offensively and defensively. I find it hard to believe that Oregon, if Brooks is healthy and they don't hit any injuries, and we usually talk about team forecasts, we never factor in injuries because they're always unpredictable. I'm not seeing how Oregon is anything less than a 2 seed, personally.
All right. Let's talk about Villanova. First off, before we do that, if there is a Chicago Cubs of college basketball, I was thinking, what makes that? Is it someone that's just gone the longest time without winning a championship? Is it there the Buffalo Bills aspect that like make the most Final Fours without winning a championship? For what it's worth, by the way, Illinois is on that list, by the way. Illinois has been to 5 Final Fours and never won one, but we'll get into Illinois. I just today filed my most tortured MLB fan bases, which I do every year right after the World Series end. The Cubs have been number one every year. This year, they're 30. And yeah. I moved Cleveland up to number one. I'm curious, if you were to do that, just top of your head, if there were a fan base, it doesn't have to necessarily be most Final Fours without a championship, or doesn't even mean they haven't won a championship ever. But if there's someone that is not so much the most feel-good story, but the one that is most due, the one that has come closest and fallen just short, or the one that would be the biggest breakthrough for a historical franchise, who do you think that would be in college basketball?
Yeah, so there definitely is no parallel, because the thing with the Cubs is there was a national appeal and a massive history of losing, and they were only good enough to even flirt with the World Series basically once every generation. So there's nothing in college basketball that can match that. to me, Northwestern has a case in terms of it's the only major conference program to never reach the NCAA tournament. And I feel like when it does happen, and I think that will be in 2018. So next season, I think Northwestern breaks through. I think that will be a relatively big national college basketball story. So that might be one parallel. To me, the best program, see, you could also do like the best program to never make a Final Four.
Is that what, BYU?
BYU and Missouri are basically hand in hand. I think it means, I mean, BYU is actually better historically than people realize, but BYU and Missouri are right there. You make a good point with Illinois overall, in terms of having never actually won it.
Yeah, I think it's Oklahoma State has been to six and never won.
They would be, yeah.
Houston and Houston, Illinois have won five, have been to five and never won.
Yeah, Oklahoma State, but the thing is, like, Oklahoma State can't even sell out its old building anymore. It's like, it's so weird. But it is a program that's pretty rich in tradition. But yeah, one of those would. But to me, the one that would have the most, it's weird. Like, I feel like people have an awareness about Northwestern having never made the tournament. So when that happened, I feel like it would get its own sidebar. You know, in a USA Today when it happens, and it would have its own, you know, Sports Center dedicated segment to it. You know, if and when Missouri and Illinois, you know,
well, I mean, Northwestern,
the bragging rights teams, you know,
half of the sports writers went to Northwestern. So I think that's also,
I think, you know what, you have a valid point there, Will. I think there's also something about that as well. And I'm fully on board with when Northwestern gets in, I want them to just barrel in as a seventh seed. I don't want them to sweat it out on Selection Sunday. I think it would be cooler if they just dominantly finally entered into the tournament.
Dominantly. Okay, I'm willing to allot that dominance for Northwestern is a seventh seed. That's actually
exactly. It's all about perspective there. But I do think Chris Collins, son of Doug, former Duke assistant, will be the one to get him there. Anyway, so Villanova.
Villanova. Go to Villanova. I was at that game. You were at that game. It's amazing to me this year that I was at the World Series Game 7 and that, two of the best sporting experiences I've ever had in my lifetime, have both been in 2016. That game still, as I wrote in my piece, the thing I remember the most about that game, other than obviously the shot, was actually the incredible shot by North Carolina right beforehand that made people, as you remember, throw those seat cushions up in the air and start yelling, holy shit, that amazing shot before the shot in Villanova. I'm curious, we can talk about Villanova as a team a little bit, but that experience just of being there, obviously an incredible moment for college basketball. As much as I love that shot, I find myself loving watching the Villanova fans celebrating that shot almost as much as I enjoy watching that shot. Just linger, you know, in the same way that next year's baseball season, a lot of the discussion is going to be, wow, the Cubs and all, how exciting that Game 7 was, how good that was for baseball. Do you think with all kind of the troubles and complaining people have had about college basketball, that Villanova game will have lingering after effects?
I actually do think that. Well, that's a great point. I think the game, the thing was, it's a great game. Like, everyone remembers the ending, okay? And Marcus Page's insane shot, which I was basically right behind, just ridiculous. You can actually, the video, I still have it on my DVR. You can see me. I like instinctively like stand up as he's shooting it. It was so surreal for him to get that shot. So everyone remembers that, and then Jenkins, obviously. But the game itself was very, very good. The game was good. Like, it was really one of the best games ever played because of the stage and because of how dramatic it was. I think college basketball needed that. The tournament itself was inconsistent, but it had its moments, obviously, because you had Stephen F. Austin almost making the Sweet 16. You had Northern Iowa. It's crazy how Northern Iowa beat Texas on the most casual half-court buzzer beater I've ever seen by Paul Jesperson. And then they blow the lead to A&M, which was statistically the worst choke in the history of college basketball. No team had ever had a lead that big with less than a minute to go and lost a game.
Seth Davis lost his Sharpie. Seth Davis lost his Sharpie in that game.
His Sharpie. Yes, he absolutely did. It's the one and only time. Personally, I believe he should have retired the Sharpie.
Yes, I agree.
But he's still staying strong with it. And so because of all this, I think there is a strong carryover effect. I think the fact that you've got Villanova coming back with all but two of their players from last year, Ryan Archidiakono is gone, Daniel Ochefu, the dude who was mopping up the floor right before all the craziness happened. Those guys left, but everyone else returns. The fact that Jenkins made the shot, he's back. I think that's a good thing. And I think there can be something to be said for familiarity with some players. Villanova is obviously a very proud Big East program. I think that will have some good good vibe, so to speak, as we head into the season, because I also think Villanova truly stands to be the team with the best chance to repeat since Florida actually did it. It's a decade ago, 06-07 Florida. And I believe that Villanova is the first team since Florida in 2006. So no matter, like, none of the teams since then won a second title in a row, obviously. Well, I don't think any of those teams since then, you know, 08 Kansas, Kentucky in 2012, Louisville the year after, Duke in 2010. None of those teams brought back their three leading scorers except Florida in 06. Now Villanova does that as well. It should be in the conversation. I'm a little surprised, and we didn't put them there either. Parrish loves this Kentucky group. I was considering putting Nova too. I'm surprised that Nova isn't more in the mix to be a top three preseason team. Now it's a top five and top seven in most people's eyes, but they bring back a lot. They got a really good transfer from Fordham coming in. They'll be really good. Xavier will also be good in the league, but it's very good for college basketball that a national champion, and I will be on, like, this stuff doesn't matter to me, but it does have an impact on coverage. The fact that an East Coast team, you know, from the Big East with a proud tradition, with a really well-known coach, with the guy that hit the winning shot, it will be good for coverage of college basketball that Villanova should be extremely good again. Like, I would be shocked. To me, the worst case scenario, if the bottom fell out on Villanova, it's a four seed. I just don't see how it wouldn't be really, really good again. It should be in contention for a one seed again. And obviously, that would be great for college hoops if it enters the tournament in the discussion to be a legitimate repeat national champion.
One of the things with college basketball that I find myself struggling with as the years go along is that the things I grew up loving about college basketball and still do love about college basketball, have emotional connection to, are often things that are not necessarily the best for the student athlete. It's probably the best way to put that, in that, like, I found myself going, oh, like, last year was a great year for me because it was lots of senior laden teams, that kind of traditional idea, and then and less of the, I mean, obviously Ben Simmons, but he didn't even make the tournament, you know. So like I find myself enjoying college basketball more when there's less of a focus on whoever the top three or four freshmen are, because I like the teams. I like the way this is all organized, and I'm less interested in who's going to go in the NFL draft. I don't watch college basketball for scouting purposes. But certainly that is beneficial for college basketball when they have someone like that people are watching all year. Who is that person, or who are those two or three people this year?
In terms of, like,
Who are the freshmen?
The freshmen listen, there are so many. I thought you were talking about veterans there, but in terms of freshmen, okay, let's just run down a bunch, because for people listening that really like to get an idea of what to expect coming into the season. All right, let's go with our top 20. So I'll go according to who is in the top 25 right now and just run it down. Duke has a guy named Jason Tatum coming in. I think he will average north of 15 points a game. He is a super smooth, super savvy, NBA-ready wing player that should have an immediate role. Very fun player to watch. I just can't see him not thriving. They've got Harry Giles, who is my favorite prospect in this freshman class, but Harry Giles has had some injury issues here. And so if Giles had been healthy, he would be on preseason first team All-American list. But the fact of the matter is he's had two torn ACLs in the past 2.5 years, and he also recently had his knee scoped. And so the expectation is that his playing time will be on a pitch count, so to speak, specifically for the first 25% of the season. So we don't know what Giles is going to be. If he gets strong and healthy, Giles can be a top three player in America. But there's too much unknown there. Those are the two really to watch. But they also have this guy, Marquise Bolden, who plays the center, a top 15 NBA prospect right now. Yes, as a freshman. Would think he'll factor in relatively importantly. And then they've got Frank Jackson, who I think is at least a 2-year player. Not a true point guard, really athletic. And a fun player to watch overall. Just not sure how much he'll factor in this year. Kentucky loaded. Malik Monk is the guy that my colleague Gary Parrish is obsessed with. I think he's too streaky, but he can fly. He can shoot. He's inconsistent, but he's a scorer. He'll probably lead Kentucky in scoring. He's got a fun name for sure. Malik Monk rhymes with dunk, and he'll be doing a lot of that. They've got a guy down low, Bam Adebayo, who is really fun, freaking bull. He's got a great attitude, really aggressive, I think he'll be the best overall defender on this team. I think he'll be the best freshman on the team. I think De'Aaron Fox at the point, who is so fast. He's the only point guard John Calipari's had that's been faster than Fox is John Wall. I think Fox will be fantastic. I mean, their freshmen are so good. They've got this guy, Wenyen Gabriel, who was like an unknown to a certain extent until he popped last spring, talking the spring of 2015, and then he becomes a five-star prospect. Next thing you know, he ends up in Kentucky. He won't be a one-and-done player, but I think he's got such great natural skill that he'll come off the bench. He'll have like plenty of games where he scores like 5 points, grabs four rebounds, and then I think he's going to have a few games this year where you're going to be like, whoa, Wenyen Gabriel had 15 points and 17 rebounds. So, you know, he's just going to be one of those kind of guys. Kentucky's just loaded overall. They've also got a freshman named Sasha Kalea-Jones who will be a multi-year player, but it's also really talented. Kansas has Josh Jackson, who was in contention with Harry Giles to be the number one player in this high school class. I think Josh Jackson will be the player of the year in the Big 12. I think he will be a top three draft pick. He is a wing. He can play defense. He can fly. Great temperament. Good shooting. He's awesome overall. It's why I'm really high in Kansas overall. You will love watching Josh Jackson play. Villanova does not really have any freshmen of impact because Omari Spellman, their one huge freshman, has been ruled ineligible for this season. Xavier, not really a team that's going to be relying on freshmen. That's why they're actually going to be really, really good. Carolina has no one that you need to know. Another veteran later in team. Oregon, the same. Virginia, by the way, who we have 8 in our rankings, has a freshman named Kyle Guy, who will probably factor in pretty importantly. Austin Nichols is a transfer from Memphis, who's more important. I know people don't get thrilled about Virginia. Let's remember, this team should have gone to the Final Four
right.
and lost to Syracuse. Oh, my goodness. Craziness. So they will be an interesting team. Actually, I'm not as high on Virginia as our rankings show. I would put them closer to 16 or 17 personally. But they still have some talent there. Kyle Guy's the freshman to know. Indiana, no worries about the freshman there. UCLA, yes. Okay. So Lonzo Ball is probably the best passing. He's the best freshman with vision in this class. And this, by the way, this is a tremendous freshman class for point guards. NC State isn't in our rankings, Will, but Dennis Smith Jr. is my pick for freshman of the year. He is, to me, the best overall pure point guard prospect. Lonzo Ball is really, really good, really, really close. He is a big reason why UCLA will be in the mix. And then let me just give you a couple more here. It's the most loaded freshman class in 7 or 8 years. All these dudes will be really, really good players. Lauri Markkanen, he's like a 6'10 Finnish dude with Arizona, can step out and shoot. Get ready to hear Dirk Nowitzki over and over because he's tall, white, foreign, and can shoot. But it's not, the comparison isn't total apples to apples there. I think he's awesome, though. He would be in my top three. I would go him, Dennis Smith Jr., Josh Jackson, and then Markel Fultz at Washington are probably the four players that I would think are one of those four will win National Freshman of the Year. Fultz is going to – Washington is in the preseason top 25 team, but he's like a combo guard with – he's like a point guard, but he's really a combo guard. Washington has just had all these NBA prospects, can't get to the tournament. He's their best one ever. At least until next year when they'll have another five-star amazing prospect, Michael Porter Jr., come to the campus. Fultz will be awesome this year as well. I think that about runs the gamut. I mean, there's still more, but that's a handful of names to watch. It really is such a dominant, strong freshman class that will be a major storyline. You're going to have a whole hell of a lot of one-and-dones this year. And inevitably, there will be a couple of guys that were five-star prospects that don't play as well as expected. That's to be expected. I mean, that's just, you see it every single year. But yes, the fact of the matter is this year will be a year dominated in decent part by the freshmen who will be good. It stinks that you don't know their names yet. You haven't seen their games and all that. But by the time we get to February and you've seen how awesome De'Aaron Fox is and Josh Jackson is and Markel Fultz is and Dennis Smith Jr. is, like, people that watch college basketball will be invested at that point anyway, and those dudes are a lot of fun.
When we talk about the seniors, to me, a guy that could have as big of an impact both on and off the court as anyone is Nigel Hayes. A lot of people have him as one of the preseason players of the year playing for Wisconsin. And of course, he did his like thing during College Game Day where he kind of joked, but I think clearly with an edge about, he's been very outspoken about kind of the way NCAA basketball is structured and I heard you guys talk about that podcast. What do you think of Nigel Hayes? Is he the type of, obviously in sports right now, there's been, I think, more of an opening up for players being a little bit more outspoken about some of the issues that they face on a regular basis. And Nigel Hayes is like a hilarious, really fun guy. He was the one that did the funny thing with the translator, the transcriptions, excuse me, during the tournament a couple of years. He's a really fun guy, but he also seems to really be embracing that kind of spotlight to do something like that. Could he be kind of that transformative figure where the casual fan that's not just tracking all these guys crosses over into the non-sports media?
I think that is something distinctly possible. I'm interested to track Wisconsin, who is my pick to win the Big Ten this year, for a number of reasons. Hayes has also been very vocal on Twitter about racial injustice and the killings of African Americans at the hands of police. He has spoken out against the NCAA. This is something that he has support with in the program and the athletic department at whole from his teammate Bronson Koenig, who I actually think will be so good this year he will prevent Nigel Hayes from winning Big Ten Player of the Year. But Koenig has Native American origins and went to protest the pipeline in the Dakotas about a month and a half ago. Also something that he's gotten a lot of support from the staff and the athletic department on the whole. Wisconsin in general, they've had some interesting characters. You know, they had Kaminsky. Decker was never one shy on his opinions and a pretty cool dude overall. So what's been interesting to see is that, you know, Bo Ryan's left. Greg Gard is now the coach there. Greg Gard was Bo Ryan's right-hand man for, you know, up to 2 decades.
And was thought at the beginning of during the middle of that season to be toast. And then they took off.
Right, exactly. And he earned the job. And he's just a guy that basically everyone in the coaching fraternity has gotten to know. And he's the goods. Like, I can definitely see Wisconsin being run by Greg Gard for the next 15 years. I could definitely see that. I think he is that good of a coach and will be able to recruit that well. I would expect the team to have consistency under Gard. But Hayes and Koenig, Vito Brown, that class of guys that came in, I was told, really changed Bo Ryan's perspective, led him to lighten up. And then Kaminsky, you know, when he was with them as well, it kind of, I don't know, it changed some things about the basketball program overall. And I think Hayes was a big part of that. I do think that he will become one of the three or four most recognizable names and faces in the sport this year. If he's probably there already, to be honest. I mean, Grayson Allen's the most known college basketball player right now. Nigel Hayes has to be three or four specifically with in the top three or four specifically with all that he's done. Then it becomes, okay, is he going to be able to do all this, get all this attention, still be productive on the floor? How will Wisconsin, I mean, one thing is more important than the other to a certain extent, obviously, but it is a natural storyline within and of itself. Will is it, if he's going to do this, you know, will he kneel during the anthem? I don't know. Will other teams kneel during the anthem? I think we'll see something like that. Perhaps the Kaepernick thing is starting to fizzle out a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it gets rejuvenated. I don't know. So how all of that impacts his play and how we, you know, throw those storylines and things against each other, I think will be pretty interesting. But yes, you're hitting on something that I expect to be a talking point throughout some of the college basketball season, and that Nigel Hayes and Wisconsin will be the socially aware team and entity of college basketball. They won't be the only ones, but he's been so much more outspoken than everyone else. But I will point out that Arkansas's athletic director has already said that he would support any sort of gestures made by his basketball team. The Virginia basketball team took a photo, a black and white photo, about 6 weeks back, all of them kneeling in support of Kaepernick's ideals and this movement. So we've seen some of that. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I wonder if anything will happen on Friday because it's the start of the season, but it's also Veterans Day. So I don't know if it's something that, you know, players would want to do on that day or wait, or I don't know. It will be I think it will be part of the discussion. I just don't know anymore how big it will be because we've now hit, you know, it's been more than 2 months since the Kaepernick thing blew up. And I do think that a lot of these college players take their cues from professionals, the NBA, and obviously Kaepernick in general and the NFL.
Well, we'll see what happens at the election. That also may be a
Also
factor in
true.
this.
That's, you know what? That's great. We're recording this before we know the
Yeah. Well, this
results.
is right. This will run the morning of the election. So everyone go vote, by the way. Everyone go vote, just to remind you, and maybe give you the public service announcement. But yeah, so it's also possible. I mean, not to get into the details of that, but certainly that seems something that would be on the table a little bit. all right, so two more things before we get into the real questions I want to ask you. This, to me, looking over, looks like a year that the ACC is absolutely stacked. This looked like a team conference that could get to, could they get 10, even 11 teams in the tournament?
This league right now, yeah, the short answer is yes. This league is ridiculous. I mean, the Big East in 2011, I think it was, set the record with sending 11 teams. I hope my facts are right there, but they set the record that season. ACC could flirt with it because, I mean, Duke, legitimate national title front runner. Carolina, Final Four, legitimate contender. Virginia, in the eyes of many, Final Four contender. Syracuse and Louisville, certainly there. NC State is a team that I'm driving the bus on right now. I think that team has got a lot of talent, and it could become pretty damn good pretty fast. Clemson has a guy named Jahron Blossom game. You talk about the older players. He will be the best player on a team that isn't, you know, an 8 seed or better. I think Clemson might struggle to make the tournament, but he is awesome and should be a first round draft pick. Miami should be really good again. Virginia Tech with Buzz Williams. Gotta figure that they're at least a bubble team at best. Florida State has maybe three future NBA players on it. Florida State's just maddening because they've had so much talent. They're similar to Washington, and they just haven't been able to break through. They should be a tournament team this year. So right now, that's Duke, Carolina, Virginia, Louisville, Hughes, Clemson, that's six, Miami, seven, NC State is eight, Tech is nine, FSU is 10. I think Pittsburgh's going to the dance. I think they'll be better than they're projected. That's 11. I think Notre Dame will fall short, but still be really good. You're talking about 12 legitimate teams. The only teams that won't be factors are Georgia Tech, BC, and Wake. And even Wake will have a solid player, Brian Crawford. So it is a crazy stacked league. It, to me, is going to be by far the best league. It's going to help itself out, I would think, because of this. Because when you have that many good teams, you're going to, and naturally, the tide is going to rise all boats there. And I can't see a situation where, I mean, it's going to be eight at the fewest. At the
Right.
fewest, it would have to be just upset after upset in non-conference with these teams not to have it break that way. There's too much talent there, too many returning pieces. Coaching is really, really good. So yeah, I would say the ACC is going to be the best team or the best league. I would say ACC will be the best, and then probably Big 12 second best, and then, man, I think there's a strong line between the ACC and the Big 12. And then there's a really strong line between the Big 12 and it might be the Big East. Big East or Big 10 are right there. Then the Pac-12. And then the SEC is the worst of those six. And the SEC might even get a push from the A-10 this year, I would think. So it'll be interesting in that regard. I do want to mention mid-majors in general. It's not right now, it doesn't look like it's shaping up to be a super strong year for mid-major type teams. Now, if you want to consider St. Mary's and BYU, they're not mid-majors, but if you want to consider them, that's fine. So they'll contend for at-large bids along with Gonzaga, three bid league in the West Coast Conference. But like Valpo should be maybe in the mix to be an at-large team. Monmouth, everyone followed Monmouth last year. They had that bench mob, Will, and people were
Of course.
loving them. They were very fun. They were really good, by the way. Like they should be in the mix to be a top 65 team. And if you're a top 65 team in the country as a mid-major, you should have a chance at an at-large bid overall. Princeton is going to be really, really good. Princeton's like St. Mary's. They bring back everyone from a team that was really good last year and that the metrics like. So they'll be in the mix. But aside from that, there's just not a ton out there. Mountain West will probably be a two-bid league at most. Maybe Nevada will sneak in. But I just bring all that up because we look at the season to start and we try and assess all these leagues and all these teams. And you try and see if there are mid-majors that are legitimately out there to steal some bids. It doesn't look super strong, But again, as always, in every single sport, the picture now will be different from the picture on Christmas, and it will be so different, you know, by March 1st.
Yeah, that was my. I was going to ask you about mid-majors, particularly Princeton, because I like the I look at KenPom; they're a top 40 KenPom team, so and like way ahead of everybody else in the Ivy.
And the Ivy will, by the way. So let me just real quick talk about the Ivy, because by the next time we talk, we'll be previewing the tournament. So the Ivy League is now unfortunately going to have a conference tournament. I like
this year. Does it start this year or next year?
You know what? Good fact check on me. I thought it starts this year.
I'll look it up. You keep talking. I'll look it up.
I think it starts this year. So it's not all eight teams. It's the top four. I like the fact that the Ivy just was a true 14 game regular season tournament. The team that finished at the top got the auto bid. And occasionally there was, you know, a tiebreaker game or in rare instances, a three-way tiebreaker. I liked that. It's going to do a four-team tournament at the Palestra. This year will be interesting because Princeton should be the best team. Harvard, I think, is the second-best team. I know KenPom has Yale ahead of Harvard. I think Harvard is definitely going to be better than Yale. But Yale will be a strong number three, and then there'll be a line of separation there from the rest of the teams overall. But, yeah, Princeton should be really, really good. Good enough, like almost that Cornell team that went to the Sweet 16, they won't be that good. And it won't be maybe as good as the Harvard team from 3 or 4 years ago, but it's going to be good enough where it's going to be in contention to get, you know, 10 or 11 seed, I think, overall.
All right. So now we have our final three questions, the three most important questions. Of course, they are for the two teams that one team that I have season tickets for and one team that I watch constantly, and then general final four picks. Starting with my Georgia Bulldogs, I, of course, have my season tickets. I added my third season ticket because I have two sons, so I added my third season ticket. So I'm hoping for the next 20 years, every time you look down under, across the visitors' bench, right on the floor, you will see a population of leeches constantly at Georgia Bulldog games. This year, I've got my Lindy's right in front of me. They actually have Georgia not only in the tournament, but number 21 in the country, which seems like awfully ambitious. But certainly, I've seen you, your pick on there. You think they're a tournament team. I look at Mark Fox, and I always joke that he's got a little Bruce Weber in him. Like, they've kind of got that kind of fundamental kind of motion offense that doesn't work if you don't have the right guys. But he's not won a tournament game with Georgia, but I think the turn that everyone's kind of been waiting for him to make, I think you can make the argument that he's made it now.
Yeah, the program. See, the thing is, he lacks the tournament success, yeah. And that's really the thing that I think prevents people from looking at Georgia as a legitimate, I don't know, SEC program. But really, over the past 3 years, it's been a top three program of success within the league overall. J.J. Frazier should be outstanding this year. Diminutive but effective mm-hmm. point guard, can step out and shoot, can yep. pass it well, can get into the lanes. I think he's going to be good.
I love Yonte Maton. Yonte Maton is a dude. He's from Michigan, and he just yeah. looks like those guys that Michigan State mint every yeah. year. He's a totally one of those guys. And I thought, wow, if George is getting one of those Michigan State mint dudes, this is going in the right direction.
Yeah, so Maton is a guy that actually will have a chance at breaking like through and getting drafted next year, the year after, depending on how strong he is. If he has really big games against Kentucky's future prospects, just a really solid defensive player, needs to be a little more effective, I think, in his overall offensive package. His ball handling could improve a little bit overall, but I like what he has overall because he's in the mix and he's a guy that we have in our top 101 players. I think Maton will be critical to getting Georgia into the tournament. The SEC isn't really, really strong this year, but I'd slot Georgia. I'd slot Georgia like a 10 seed. I think I'd put them 21 by Lindy's is way too high for me. I'm not seeing that whatsoever, but I am seeing Georgia as a clear cut top four team in the SEC. Frazier will probably be a first team all league selection. I think he'll be that good. Maton will probably be second or third team. And they'll be able to overcome the loss of Kenny Gaines, who is streaky but important to what they were doing last year overall. So feel confident about Georgia. Fox is a good dude, good coach. I don't see this team being flawed to the point that they would dip into the bottom half of the standings, in part because the league just still is not at the level that it should be overall. they aren't going to be anywhere near what Kentucky is, but they'll have a chance to beat Kentucky when that game comes to Athens in, what is it, February?
Yeah, and it's funny, like the last time. Of course, I think you make an argument 2 years ago, the only reason they made the tournament, because their resume was very right on the edge.
Oh, I was down on them, man. I was way down on them when they made
it. But they were closer than anyone to beating Kentucky during that season. Remember, they were ahead by like 9 with 3 minutes to go. We were losing our minds. And of course, Kentucky, as they tend to, did come back. But I think that game got a lot of national attention. I think put Georgia. That was the tournament. That could have been their game that would have made up for the lack of tournament wins if they'd have won that. But they get Kentucky late in the year again this year. And I don't think Kentucky will be undefeated like they were then. But certainly it's always high profile when you get them late. Which leads me to my Illini, my beloved, devoted Illini, this year no longer having to start the season with 6 games in Springfield, Illinois, which will be very helpful. Remember last year they lost to Chattanooga at home, who beat Georgia as well, but they also lost. It was a rough one last year, a rough start to the season last year. This year, it's funny, a lot of people thought that John Grosch's job would be on the line if they did not make the tournament this year. I still think it's possible, but he had a terrific recruiting class coming in with a new athletic director who seems to be a strong supporter of Grosch, and they seem to be kind of an ideological match in kind of the way that they fit together. So I think while Grosch, I've been seeing a lot of he's on the hot seat type of thing. I think this year would have to really bottom out for that to happen. But the question is, he's only made the tournament once since he's been in Illinois. They did win. They did win a game that year against Colorado and played and should have beat Shane Larkin in Miami, if memory serves me correct. If you remember, that is the game that caused the replay rule for out of bounds plays, for balls out of bounds at the end of tournament games. That's the one that actually they call that the Illinois rule. At least I call it the Illinois rule.
I think you're right. That year, it's all coming back to me.
Yeah, that was the Illinois rule because that cost them a trip to the Sweet 16 that year. But it's been pretty disappointing since then. To me, this looks like a team that in a generally tough Big Ten, if they can finish in the top half with a couple wins, I think this is a potentially a tournament team, if just because of Malcolm Hill.
Okay, I got thoughts on your Illini.
I want to hear them. I want to hear every single one of them. The notebook.
Okay, so first off, I put myself through this just weeks long exercise of ranking every single team in college basketball. And if you're interested in that and you want to really get an idea of how everything falls, go to cbssports.com and you'll see it's still on our main College Hoops Arena landing page, the 1 to 351 rankings. Within that, though, we also did a map of the country. And so within every state, every state's logo is the team that I deem will have the best season in 2016-2017. So while Carolina is going to be good, Duke should be better. So Duke is the logo on North Carolina. UCLA is the logo on California. Oregon is the logo on Oregon. Gonzaga is the logo on Washington and all that. On Illinois, it is not the Illini, but rather it is Illinois State. Mm-hmm. I think both teams are pretty close. I think, and here's the deal. So when I do these rankings, like if you told me tonight Illinois played Illinois State with both full rosters on a neutral court, I would take Illinois State to win. Maybe by 2 points, but I think right now Illinois State is a better team than Illinois. So it just so happens that in a year that I expect Illinois to be good and certainly improved, Illinois State will truly threaten to win the Valley and dethrone Wichita State. Something to keep an eye on there. Dan Muller's team in Normal is really strong. Yes, that is Normal. Illinois is really strong this year, and I think they're just a little bit better than Illinois. As for the roster, this team, if it can avoid suspensions, if it can avoid injuries, there is no doubt when I look at what Grosch has, the talent here is single digit seed in the NCAA tournament talent. Woo! Okay. It is. Malcolm Hill is freaking terrific, man. Like, no doubt about it. Top 5 talent in the Big Ten right now. Going to be awesome. Trace Abrams back. Laron Black, got to be good. Jalen Coleman lands, probably one of my 2 or 3 favorite sophomores in the Big Ten this season. They have all of the pieces there. This should be, I would say this. Here's how I would rank out the Big Ten. I would go Wisconsin 1, Indiana 2, Michigan State, which is going to look weird because they're going to run a four-guard offense because they got no front court play right now. Michigan State, I would still put three. I would go Purdue four. Ohio State, who was randomly not good last year but got rid of the guys they didn't want, basically. A lot of transfers out. I would still say Ohio State would be five. I'd say Maryland six and Illinois seven. I would put Illinois above Michigan this year. And I'd put them above Iowa this year. And then everyone else that they're above is kind of makes sense. So yeah, and I think that will maybe just be enough. Depends on the non-conference wins they get. Depends on if they can steal any games on the road. This should be a good team. You talked about Gross on the hot seat. I did put them. Unfortunately, hot seat posts, people hate them.
I get it.
I hate doing them, but they get read and people, and plus, like, fans have this sick, like, yeah, I got to see our guy in the hot seat because I want him out of there. Like, it gets weird, man, but they get perverse like that. To me, if Illinois is sub 500 again, which should not happen, he's gone. They were 15-19 last year.
You mean sub 500 total or sub 500 Big Ten?
Sub 500 total.
Okay. I certainly agree with you there.
Sub 500 Big Ten, that just depends. I mean, if they're amazing in non-conference, stumble in Big Ten, go sub 500, creep into the tournament. If they get to the tournament, he's not going anywhere. They could miss the tournament if scenarios fall correctly, and he could still be okay. Obviously, the recruiting it can be a big factor with that as well. Last year was the only year that he was under 500 or even close to it. But I understand, like, Illinois fans have a right to be eager, anxious, expecting more. Given, you know, the consistent talent that comes out of the state, you know, particularly right up the snug against Lake Michigan, Illinois should just be better than what it is overall. There's no arguing that. So I get that the fan base is just so eager. Like, Illinois in basketball, to me, should be close to what LSU is in college football because of its location. When you're that close to so much recruiting talent, you might not necessarily be the best program in your conference, and that's okay. But really, like, there's no excuse for Illinois not to be a perennial top 25 program in America, and you just can't say that it's been that. It hasn't. Hasn't been close to it. And I know that fans are just dying for that to turn around. We're still years out from that being a reality. Maybe Gross can be the guy to do it. I think he's a really good coach. I do. I think he's a really good coach. Like, he's had success. He did well at Ohio. He earned getting the Illinois job. But sometimes these things, listen, you can have so many just unexpected things crop up when you're a coach that sometimes are out of your control, sometimes they're not. But from injuries to maybe inheriting the wrong kind of player to maybe just getting the wrong kind of player, which can blow up a locker room over the course of the entire season, it can become tough. But this is certainly a prove it year for Gross. I think Illinois squeaks in. My official prediction. That's my prediction. I'm putting them as they're going to Dayton. I would say a first four team. They should be there. Malcolm Hill is so good. He's basically like Jerome Blossom Glame at Clemson and Malcolm Hill are the two like outstanding stud players that are going to be on teams that won't, you know, be considered anything close to a second weekend tournament team.
Awesome. I will take it. I will take it. I'm taking the entire family is doing a excursion to the new State Farm Center. They've completely redone it in the last couple of years. I've not seen it yet. So we are there. Maryland at Illinois on January 14th. I'm considering it a referendum on what that feels like the type of game. If you're going to make the tournament, you need to win that game.
I would agree. You know what? Beat Maryland at home. Maryland's a team that completely has to retool its front court. Mila Trimble should be really good, but yes, you win that game if you're an NCAA tournament team.
That's exactly right. All right, so last question then. Give me your final four. You have to give me your final four. We're not going to let you out of here without doing that.
That's fine. Actually, as we do this, I think my final four picks go up on Election Day on CBS Sports. I don't know.
That's tomorrow, by the way. We're taping this the day before Election Day. I don't want people thinking this is like for a week and a half ago.
It is tomorrow. Yeah, it is tomorrow. We are recording this literally the day before. And Man, that's tomorrow's going to be so surreal.
Oh, I listen. That's why I'm getting everything done ahead of time, so I can go hide in a bunker all day. But sorry.
Will you? I'll answer the final four thing, but real quick. But will you watch? Like, I'm not like a political junkie, so to speak. But I always, it goes back to, I remember 2000. Like, I was literally up to like 4:30 in the morning watching Tim Russert in election coverage. Yeah. I usually stay up pretty late. I don't know. There's something about it. I do dig it. It's got like a Selection Sunday kind of feel to it, maybe. But will you immerse yourself in that, or will you just kind of like peek in here and there?
Oh, no. I'm kind of on duty for Bloomberg a little bit. So
I wondered if you were going to have to write. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will be, I will certainly be watching to see the number of different scenarios that could go down. Like I wrote one, we were going to work on one piece and we ended up not coming together, but just the idea of all the different things that could make this go past Tuesday and all the different things that could, like there are some whimsical, some decidedly less so, that the idea that this is going to be over Tuesday, even if the race isn't that close, frankly, all those people, everyone that's like, wow, it's going to be over on Tuesday, don't be certain is probably the best way to put that.
Yeah, I have thought about that. Okay, right, final four. We'll see.
Final four.
All right, final four. I usually enjoy picking a final four, even though we don't have a bracket. So I do not subscribe to the pick what you think the four best teams are, because the four best teams almost never get to the final four. Only happened once, all four won seats, 2008. But I did stick to more chalk than I initially thought that I was going to. I'm going to go Villanova. I'm going to go Oregon. I'm going to go Kansas. And I'm going to go Duke. It's way too much chalk. And then I'm going to take Kansas to win it all. In part because I believe that they will have the best backcourt. They'll have Devontae Graham and Frank Mason as a two-point guard attack. I don't think it's a fatal flaw. Duke doesn't have a point guard. Frank Jackson is not a true point guard. Grayson Allen might run some point this year. Matt Jones is not a true point guard. It's just the one thing. You're going to hear more about that. There'll probably be stories written about it. Hell, I might have to write about it. We'll see how everything pans out. I'm just not going to take Duke for that reason. And also, it's just super boring to take Duke, who is an overwhelming favorite right now. I think it is super tough to repeat, so I can't go with Nova. I do think Archie Diacono was really important to that team in general overall, so I can't force myself to pull the trigger there. Dylan Brooks is my player of the year with Oregon. I like what they have overall, but ultimately, I just think Kansas could have a top three player in Josh Jackson, could have an amazing backcourt. Carlton Bragg is going to be a huge factor this year down low, will be a breakout sophomore. And then they got this foreign kid who's been there a while. His name is Svi. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and say the last name here correctly. Svi Mykhailiuk, I think is how you say it.
Yes.
He is an NBA prospect, has not yet truly broken out. He will be in the back. He's kind of like he's really a shooting guard. So their three guard attack, I think, will be enough. Bill Self is an amazing coach. He should be a coach with more than one national championship on his dossier. I think that happens this year. So Kansas is my pick right now. Obviously, the four teams I just gave you will not be the four teams I give you when we preview the bracket on Selection Sunday. But I do want to ask you a question. As you look at this season, real quick here, as you look at the season, one, if you have a Final Four, please give it. But two, anything we haven't touched on, what are you curious about, whether it's like this weekend or, you know, non-conference or the season in general? Anything else about the season you're particularly intrigued about, Will?
Well, you know, it's funny. I kind of touched on this earlier, but I love, you know, this has been an exciting year for me because my two favorite sports are baseball and college basketball. And they've both had terrific endings that have expanded beyond a natural base of fans. And that is something that, you know, for me, growing up, college basketball was like, it was the Cardinals and it was Illini basketball. And it was the most important thing. And everything felt massive. And I think in the last few years, there's been this, I think, somewhat unfair notion that college basketball is not what it once was, or it's too focused on the tournament or so on. And, you know, people like you and people like me, I'll be watching basketball, college basketball all evening on Friday. And I'll be watching all the tournaments throughout Thanksgiving and Christmas. And you know, one of my favorite things, when I'm in New York, I'll sneak over and catch just a couple random games at Barclays if I'm there in December. Like, to me, that is college basketball is like when I'll be going to the Super Bowl this year in Houston, and I'm going to sneak in a Houston Baptist game.
Love
Like
it.
that is what I do. Like I love college basketball. So for me, I find it very exciting to see, because the Villanova thing was so great, and because and it's funny because a lot of the tournament had actually been a little ugly to that point. We've already forgotten. I know I'm talking to someone that works for CBS, so I will not make you respond to this. But when the bracket leaked and so on, like there was some ugliness going on. And I think there was a sense among some that like, oh, well, this is college basketball, just dessert and all that sort of stuff. And so for me, I don't like it when people rip on college basketball because I really like college basketball. So to see the way that ended and to have it be this big collective awesome thing is something I hope moving forward we'll get more people back into this game that I deeply love.
I agree, and then I'll end it with this. College basketball doesn't need to compete with the NFL to compete with the NBA. I understand that, like, you want to give the sport as much exposure, and that there's – I understand that. But, like, the sport is already – like, it's a major American sport, okay? And I get that it will never be as big the rest of the season as it is in March. That's okay. I still maintain – that while there are issues with the first 6 weeks of the season, I hate that home and homes are disappearing and these major programs are relying on these exempt tournaments in far off places to force them to play against other top 40 caliber teams. And that's where they're getting the heft of their non-conference strength of schedule. I don't like that. I wish, like, who is it? Clemson plays. Is it Georgia? No, who does Clemson play? Someone plays. There's like a really good.
Oh, the first day. Yeah, it's Georgia Clemson.
Yeah, so that's a really solid non-conference season opener, home and home, okay? I wish that there was more of that in the sport. But overall, yes, some criticisms of college basketball are legitimate. I don't believe the sport is dying. In fact, I feel like the sport is still growing. It's always going to be there. You're always going to have alumni base. The tournament's always going to be strong so long as they don't frickin' expand it, and I don't believe that they will. So I get you, like, 1,000% on that, man. Like, I sometimes think that the criticism of the sport is overwrought. And when people discuss, like, we don't get to know these players, like, I disagree with that to a certain extent, because you know what? Hockey for a lot of people is the best sport on the planet. And 95% of Americans couldn't name you more than three hockey players, right? You know? And is that hockey's fault? I don't necessarily think that might be the case, because we are so much more splintered now in just how we consume everything in general. And we're just obsessed with this notion of, like, the sport's not getting enough attention, and, like, the NFL ratings coming down from record highs. And now it's like the sky is caving in because the NFL's not raking in massive ratings on top of the record set that, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just feel like sometimes we're just way too critical and way too eager to talk about the negatives with stuff when college basketball has its issues. But overall, like, it's still a really fun, enjoyable thing. And this year, I really think the season is setting up to be very fun, in part because of the freshmen who we might not know now, but I guarantee you, you're going to know who Josh Jackson is and Markel Fultz is within like 3 or 4 weeks, even passing by. You know, I just feel like we depend on our Twitter accounts and the PTI rundown to determine what's happening in sports. And you just got to go deeper than that. That's all.
Preach, 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 preach. Absolutely, man. Well, as always, I honestly, like, you are my favorite voice about college basketball, and I'm very honored that I get, not only have you on the podcast, but get to talk to you about this stuff all year. It is legitimately a pleasure.
All right, man. If you get up to New York at any point in the next 6 weeks, you know, when the hoops are happening, just give me a shout. We'll meet up.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Matt Norlander. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Norlander, MattNorlander. See his work on CBS Sports and yell at him about the Illinois State pick. I have no problem with ISU. I got no beef with ISU, but I'm not ready for that. You didn't pick Northwestern, so we're okay. all right. So this is the Willis Experience Podcast. Music is by the Sundogs. Please go to iTunes, review us, and subscribe to us there. Otherwise, have a great week. Enjoy the games, everyone, on Friday, and we'll talk to you next week. Be safe. Thanks, Matt.